Kailash, welcome to the Commerce Talks podcast. Actually, we planned to meet on site during the Seamless conference in Dubai, but there was like so much stuff going on, including Dubai traffic, that we now have the opportunity to record a remote episode of Commerce Talks. Please introduce yourself and tell us what Megastores is actually doing.
Great. Thank you, Alex. This was really a unique opportunity for me to meet Lina and you at Seamless. Thank you so much for organizing and inviting me to this podcast. I'll quickly share about my intro. I'm Kailash Tulsi Gadra. I'm from Mumbai, India. After my undergrad in computer science, like a tech guy, I went to US for my master's again, computer science in USC, Los Angeles. And post that, I worked at VMware, which is now part of Broadcom, like a virtualization giant, basically. So I worked there for 3 years and then I returned back to India, to start my entrepreneurship journey, basically. I can probably add how did I get started with Megastore? So when I returned, I started an IT services company, which is Atulsya Technologies. It is both actually products as well as services. So we work on enterprise software development, basically for larger customers. And in 2018, in one of the like a tour in Kutch, which is not just my native place, like I was born in Kutch, but also the largest district in India. And, you know, we did the craft tourism in which, you know, we went out and see places, but then we stayed at artisans' places, right? You know, we stayed at their home, eat food, what they had to offer, learn what they do and all that. And that's where I realized that, you know, we can use technology to solve the problem. And we thought, hey, why not build a marketplace which is purely focused on handicraft and, you know, allows these artisans to sell their products online. So that's where megastores.com was born.
Can you elaborate a bit on the business model itself? So who is selling exactly to whom? Is it because first time when I opened the website, it reminded me on a B2B website where independent producers from India, for example, can sell to other B2B companies, retail companies, for example, like in Europe or in Dubai, but it can also be like a B2C kind of thing. So how is it working exactly?
Yeah, so primarily we are a B2C marketplace, wherein all we wanted to make sure that everything handmade is available at one place. If you see, Alex, there are many websites in which you'll go. Some are focused on, let's say, home decor. Some are just on furniture. Some are on jewelry and all that. So we wanted to become the marketplace for everything handmade. So it's a B2C portal. And there are sellers who are selling their handmade products on the platform. And customers are from worldwide, right? Any country, anybody can place order and get their product delivered at their doorstep. The sellers right now, they are only from India. In future, we are going to expand wherein sellers from, let's say, Thailand, Vietnam, for example, I mean, we have done some market research, they'll be able to register and also from Europe and, you know, US. But right now, our supply chain, the source of the product is only from India, all the artisans from India. And of course, you know, apart from B2C, and we charge some commission on sales, right? That's our business model. Other thing that we offer, Alex, is also product cataloging. So a lot of these entrepreneurs, sellers, right? They don't have ready-made, you know, these digital product catalogs available that they can sell their products online. So we say, hey, you know what? These products are really amazing. We want them to be on our black marketplace. Why not we help you? So we have a team, you know, operations team that can get the photography, editing, you know, SEO friendly write-ups and everything done in much, much faster way. And we create this bundle of products. So that's another, you know, the revenue generation more. And the third one You rightly kind of pointed out that it's also, we are also now venturing into B2B, wherein we have more than now 7,000 plus SKUs across all these different categories. So now we are looking forward to corporates, for corporate gifting purpose, a lot of bulk orders for various exporters, and also retailers in different countries. For example, we have number of retailers in Malaysia right now. They order directly from us, you know, in bulk, basically. So we are also looking forward to that.
And what were the channels before megastores.com? So the, and how big are usually the vendors on your marketplace? But without megastore.com, they had their channels to sell to B2C or to B2B. What was it before? What it still is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, partially there is. So earlier, frankly speaking, they were selling through exhibitions. You know, they do local exhibitions, right? You know, funded by the government or the private entity. Even in Dubai or in UAE region, there are a lot of handicraft exhibitions these days happening. And I'll just, before I share the selling channels and everything, I'll share the numbers about the how big is the market, right? And what's the role of UAE? So from India, it is almost around $4.5 billion of yearly exports to other countries of just handicraft, right? And the major importer is US, like, you know, almost 30%. And the second country is UAE, which is close to 8% basically after, and then UK, Germany, and so on. So UAE is a big market, and basically the number of channels for these artisans before is through exhibition, through local tie-ups with other brands. So they will buy in bulk and, you know, rebrand it or, you know, just white label it and, you know, sell it. And they probably will sell online on Facebook or, you know, on Instagram, just tag posts, you know, try through WhatsApp and, you know, DMs and all that. So kind of unorganized, but yeah, the people were able to sell it. And finally, just like to touch upon a few items with respect to selling part. So we have four different types of sellers on the marketplace. So number one are the artisans, right, who are the creators of the handmade products, basically. So they are the one who are the manufacturers, that we can say. The second type of seller are all these local organizations. They are both profitable as well as non-profit organizations who want to support these artisans and, you know, provide them with raw material or whatever that they need, and make sure the product is created, and then they'll be able to help sell it. The third are various cooperatives. So what happens is, in India, the 10, 15 sellers will come together and they'll form a cooperative. So it's like a one small company, and they'll say, you know what, whenever the order comes, we'll divide and we'll share the profit. And, you know, that way, you know, not, they can serve bulk order and they'll get some business. The fourth type of seller that we have is brands, like, you know, the guys, the entrepreneurs who have learned about designing from design schools, and they would want to get a particular latest trendy products. So they'll give their design to these artisans. Hey, you know, give me, make products like this. So these are the brands that we are talking about. So we have all these four types of sellers. Now these brands, they have their own website as well, but as you see, you know, driving traffic to the website and doing all this marketing and everything kind of like takes a lot of time and energy and money for all these brands. So they tie up with us, and because we have like products across different categories, so they'll also get some sort of a cross selling as well. So yeah, that's in nutshell just wanted to tell.
Again, just talking about more about the categories, what's very unique that you are kind of serving everything from furniture to toys to fashion to jewelry. So tell us more about like how does a day look like in megastores? What sort of, like, is it like 90% fashion? Is it 50%, I don't know, like furniture? Like what sort of categories people are going after it? And then secondly, like, how do you make sure that you have a wide assortment in that category? So is it that the brands approach you because megastores is that big? Or is it because you are kind of acknowledging that you yourself would go to these exhibitions and try to pitch to these small players like, hey, have you heard of the megastore? You know, so can you elaborate a bit on that?
Absolutely. Thank you, Lina, for asking. Actually, that's kind of something where we actually started, right? You know, when we are new, we used to attend these exhibitions and say, you know, what kind of product is this? How did you guys make it? What's the process behind it? Because one thing that we have to realize that when we talk about authentic products, right, there are a lot of machine-made products, you know, fake colors, screen printing, and a lot of things like that. So we have to identify and make sure the creator, the artisan, or the seller itself, you know, they the company itself is authentic, basically. So we used to visit these exhibitions, get the right sellers, and we used to pitch, hey, you know, why not sell this on our marketplace? You know, we'll do the advertisement for you free of cost. We'll, you know, connect with you with a lot of corporates. We'll do the marketing for you. These products are really amazing. That's how we started. And see, the vision is that everything handmade. That's one thing that we started with Megastore Flip. That we, I mean, of course, you know, a lot of people say, hey, Kailash, you just need to focus on maybe a few categories. Just get like expert into that, and then you can move to second category and third. But what we wanted to solve for everybody, so especially after COVID-19, right? That's where, you know, we were like, you know, full-fledged in operation in 2020. What happened is when COVID hit, all of their sales channels kind of stopped, basically. You know, the stocks were piling up and they were not able to sell. And these artisans were from all different categories, you know, apparels, they had toys, they had furniture items, home decor, furnishing, and everything. So we said, why should we restrict? So during that COVID moment, we just came up with, yeah, everything handmade. We want to accommodate all these artisans and all the products from India and make them available on our platform. So thus we have like all the products now. But yes, we do have some seller prioritization program. So what we do is that, you know, we have 7,000 plus products, and not every product will get an equal footage and everything. So we are focused more on home decor and home furnishing category, basically. That's kind of easy, but at the same time, it's high in demand, and the returns for such products are less. So more on home decor, furnishing products, basically, then some sort of women accessories, like, you know, all these clutches and, you know, bags and, you know, things like that. That's again a second category. We do get a lot of inquiries for even kitchenware items. Like, we have very good brands like Petal, who are producing brass and, you know, Petal copper products, which are very unique, basically. So that's the kind of a third category, and so on. So that's so like
before I get it to Alex back the microphone. So it's very interesting. The reason I wanted to understand the focus on the categories, because I would say, you work with small businesses that, as you mentioned, do not have infrastructure, do not have a structure. So tell us more about how do you handle delivery, returns, customer service, you know, what if the item arrives completely broken, you know, because it technically affects your reputation as megastores. How do you deal with that? Do you have to invest a lot in the back end to kind of operate such a wide assortment and such a high number of SKUs?
Absolutely, Lina. So that's the thing that we do, right? That's why we charge, let's say, 15% of sales, because we are not the manufacturer. We facilitate everything. The moment customer places an order, what happens is, so we are a tech company in a way. Primarily, we call it ourselves as a tech company, because every artisan, every seller gets their seller platform. They have their own mobile applications, everything. So they get an order, but our team, operations team, will call them and say, hey, you know, you got an order. This is the product. Will the product picture is also shown to them automatically in their app. We confirm with them and make sure that they get this product ready. And basically, we have a tie-up with a lot of logistic companies, basically multiple companies, whoever is near to that location, basically, you know, so that is a zip code, pin code, and we have auto detection software, whatever that nearby pickup point, which is there, a logistic company would go there, pick up the parcel, and deliver directly to the customer anywhere in the world, basically. If it is international, then it comes to our Mumbai headquarters, and from here, because it's international, we want to make sure that everything is right, and then here our team itself, like, they ship the product. Now Returns, yes. There are a lot of cases that we get. For example, terracotta products, like very fragile, you know, while in shipment, basically, because we don't fully handle shipping on our own, basically. So we rely on third party services. The products gets broken and, you know, customers would complain. These things are usual, in our, like day to day operations. And what we have to do is we have to take, the cost on us. Like, you know, we have to kind of pay for the extra shipping. We request the seller again that to deliver another parcel and, we ship it back, to the customer. So that extra shipping cost basically is on us, but the product again seller has to deliver. So we try to convince them, and we also, you know, make sure that customer gets what they want. So customer service for us is the number one thing right now. Like, you know, if we are at fault or whoever is at fault, we make sure that we take that problem and we solve it for the customer. So that's kind of a lot of time, you know, and energy goes, you know, for all my team members to solve for customers. Basically.
You might have seen that on the stage where Dina moderated last week in Dubai, or 2 weeks ago, or was it last week? Time is flying. We spoke a lot of the new Chinese platforms entering like the US market and the European market. And actually, they don't see factories like you're seeing them as independent brands anymore. It's just like a production capability. And they have, in some cases, like Shein, an integrated ERP connecting with those factories. Temu is kind of offering a standard marketplace. So the customers or the factories you're working with, is this also kind of a group of factories that might be connected to those new Chinese marketplaces, or is it kind of out of scope?
I'd say it's different, basically, because the nature of products and the way people in India, you know, the artisans, they work here is different, actually. And for us, I'll also share that if the product creation process is standard, then you'll get similar product. But otherwise, every product is unique, and the process is also different. So it's difficult for standardization to happen. So more groundwork will be required, and, you know, a lot of training, and, you know, will be needed, which is going to be costly for us at this point. But yeah, you're right, you know. Some sort of a standardization, some sort of a factory type of setup can be done in nearby centers. And we call them, like, you know, district level clusters, basically. That's kind of in a future goal, or, you know, can be done in future. But at this point, no, you know, we are going like step by step. The maximum, I'd say, like a company style that we have is the cooperative kind of sellers and these brands, basically, who are able to, like, you know, deliver very good, you know, product and, you know, services from their part. But the individual artisans and other non-profit, they still would struggle.
And are we, so the fabrics and the patterns I saw on your website, that seemed to be very, like, typical, like, for Indian markets, right? Is this something where, like, the factories and the shop owners would adapt, like, to more, like, American, as you said, like 30% is, like, exported, or European taste? Or do you believe that this kind of patterns will continue even in a more globalized environment?
Really great question. So basically, personally, my view here is that we'll have to train these artisans. That's what it is happening. And, you know, one thing that I didn't mention is that initially we did a lot of training. You know, I myself went to different parts of India, even to Leh Ladakh, which is, like, you know, the northernmost area at the high altitude, like maybe 10,000 feet or something. And we used to train these artisans about all these e-commerce, why sell online, product pricing, packaging, and somewhat design as well. So all these designs, all these patterns that come, the one thing is that we are also promoting the same because it represents a region. So these designs represents their own culture, their area level, you know, different expertise, you know, a lot of things that you'll see. So we would like to, like, keep both in mind, like the original design that kind of represents the area, the culture, their own traditions, basically. And, you know, they also sell good because, you know, a lot of time abroad, like, you know, in US or Europe, for example, they'll not find these designs, you know, and they'll not. So it'll be unique for them as a market, basically. But yes, you're right. We are also trying to add brands, all these entrepreneurs, that the fourth category of seller that I talked about, right? These guys, they know, okay, what is trending these days? And they'll come up with new designs and they'll teach the artisans. And basically, so that kind of is out of scope from our services. But then we really venture, find out that, you know, these entrepreneurs who are actually creating these trendy designs, because in a normal, I would say, the export market, these designs will hold, or, you know, will sell faster, basically. So, but we are also making sure that the native designs are also equally promoted. Ultimately, you know, that the ultimate. So one of the things that I'd like to share is that making sure that craft doesn't die in any country, not just India. Every single country there, they have their own traditions and everything. So we just also want to make sure that every craft stays alive. Like a lot of our products, like, for example, Rogan art, you know, that is there on our platform. This art is like 400, 500 years old. And there are only 2 to 3 families in the entire country. They do this art. And it's literally amazing. Like our Prime Minister, Mr. Modi, when Barack Obama, he had come to India, he had gifted this Rogan art frame to the President of US, ex-President of US. You know, such kind of art, they have their own style and designs, basically. So I would want to, you know, keep them original and still going. But yes, equal investment has to be done to create trendy design and catchy, whatever is in the market.
So Kailash, continuing on the customer, actually, it's a perfect to my next question. Is it just for the reader to kind of understand what sort of customer? So Temu attracts people that maybe, you know, want something cheaper, faster, you know, like price is a big, this Chinese players is a big element. Amazon in the UAE attracts because it's convenient, right? Like it's super fast, wide choice. Etsy is very, like, you know, I shop when I lived in the UK, I shopped on Etsy because I always, you know, as you mentioned, wanted something unique, personalized for my father, personalized for my mom. So people that really mattered to me, I went to Etsy, not because it's the cheapest, or I got to be honest, I didn't even compare the price because I thought these guys had great ideas, you know, and as you say, like very, very personalized to let's say my father or mother or sister. So tell us, like, about your type of, we're very clear on the sellers. Who are the customers? Who are these people like that come and shop on your platform?
Yeah, so the buyers on our platform, basically, as of now, they are women in their 30s and 50s from tier 1 and tier 2 cities. The major part that I, you know, talked about is home decor and furnishing, and then bags and, you know, the kitchen and, you know, related accessories and items. They'd want, the first thing first is uniqueness. You already shared that. They'd want something very unique. Like, for example, Indian women, they wear sari. Like, you know, that's the apparel, you know, style in wedding. Basically, they'd want to make sure that the sari that I'm wearing, no one else is wearing. And they should ask them, hey, you know, where did you get these? Because there are very, you know, a handful of these pieces available in the market, basically. So that's one of the main, I would say, selling point is the unique products that are not available anywhere on any other marketplace, basically. So that's the first of its kind. Secondly is, we are also, like, you know, all these products are sustainable, eco-friendly. And, you know, the customers who are touched or who want to promote or, you know, only buy eco-friendly product, you know, sustainable, reusable, they do want to come here and, you know, purchase the product. The third that I'll also touch upon is that great quality, basically. So not just uniqueness, but the quality product. Some of the natural dyes that are being done on the clothing, right? Even the clothes will torn out, or, you know, it will won't be usable, but the design on it will not fade away. You know, the strong colors, the kind of natural colors that they would have, they'll still stay. So these are some of the, like, you know, unique propositions that we offer for customers to keep coming and purchase from our website. I know that handmade products, you know, they're a little higher price. They're on a higher side. Basically, they're not that cheap because it's created manually, like handmade. It involves a lot of hours, you know, and that. So that's why it becomes costly. But that's where we come into a picture where we identify a lot of sellers who are able to, you know, produce this at scale because they have larger team and everything. So ultimately, one of our, I would say, other like problem to solve is make this craft product available for the masses. Right now, it is available for the classes that we could say. But one of our aim is that as well.
So how do they find you? Is it, do you do like, sorry, before Alex, next. So how do they find you? Is it like word of mouth, you know, because that is not very scalable, let's say outside India, right? So like, are you doing all the brands that you are listing is like actually generating you those leads? So like if I was buying this jacket and now, you know, you're delivering me this jacket next day, like, you know, like a marketplace, I can buy directly from the brand. Like what I'm wearing is Massimo Dutti. I can buy from Massimo Dutti, but they will take 7 days to deliver. Mm. Or I could go on to the, you know, like Unas or Namshi, and they will deliver me next day the same jacket. So what about you? You know, is it customers coming because they can't find anywhere else? Or you're super convenient? How do they find you?
So we do a lot of online marketing, basically, you know, on Instagram and Meta platforms. That's where we do it. We attend even, you know, we'll have our advertisements on various exhibitions. You guys are purchasing product here at the exhibition. You can find same product on our platform, basically. And we
deliver, oh, okay.
You know, to your doorstep, basically. So we offer, we do that as well. We also partner, we collaborate with a lot of exporters, basically. And through various big exhibitions, like, you know, handle. So there is a, there are various councils in India. So there is Export Promotion Council of Handicraft, EPCH. There is DIH. And there are a lot of groups like that. So we are part of these councils, basically. And through their events and through their channels, basically, we promote our platform. We even were part of a lot of newsletters, which were sent out by, I'd say, you know, the companies or the organizations who are promoting a sustainable product, basically, you know. So, you know, through that also, we get a really good, you know, visit ratio. Plus, we do some sort of Instagram live, basically. We invite artisans, sellers, and we also take their interview. You know, it's 30 minutes on Instagram and say, you know, how did you start? And, you know, there are typical questions and a lot of seller community this way gets attracted. And, you know, they also want to be part of the story. Because we are an open and transparent marketplace. Everything that people see, that's what they get. And we even document the craft. We even document the processes that are part of it and everything. So that way, through social media, it's more. And we get a good number of clicks. Plus, we have usual, you know, automation that is there. Like once you have even liked our post or anything commented on our social media, through all these CRM software, we get customer data, and then we pitch them on WhatsApp. Basically, the automated messaging can be sent out, and that's where they get it. And every time on festival, so in during festivals in India, you know, India has a lot of festivals, you know, compared to other countries, I'd say. So during festivals, they are looking for unique products, and basically we run ads during those times, and you know, they you know, during these times we get a lot of customers, and then throughout the year we pitch them, basically, you know, sell them many other items. So.
Nice. So, my last question here for the podcast is also targeting on the, yeah, Chinese platforms, I would say. And maybe can you share like some KPIs? I don't know, whatever you can share, how many people are working for mega stores or how many vendors are selling there. But my core question is, we are seeing now in this new platform world that they try to get independent from this winning customers over third-party channel, Instagram, Facebook, Google, because they are catching attention within the Shein app or within the Temu app, and they are like active every day. So the customer is opening the app without knowing that he wants to buy something, and with like live video entertainment, TikTok style kind of stuff. the customer is like drawn into a purchase, which is interesting because this was only happening before in a city mall kind of environment, right? So, and the more they become independent from Instagram and Facebook, they're not independent now, they're still like buying lots of traffic there, but the more they're like becoming independent, the better their margins are, right? And is this something where, from like a Megastore's perspective, you would also look into in something that is like engaging with customers, or is your assortment too small? Because you're like covering essentially every category, how Lina explained it initially.
And I'd like to thank you, Alex, for this. I actually wanted to add this point, is that we kind of, we were struggling because typically it becomes a simple 2D marketplace, basically, you know, without innovation. So we brought socials angle inside the platform. So Megastores now, when we pitch it, we say Megastores is social and video commerce based marketplace. Like in our event also, I had shared that. And that's what we want to solve, is that what is happening these days is, you'll see everywhere, is that customers are engaged on social media platforms. For example, Instagram, they're commenting, they're liking, there are DMs and everything. But the purchase is happening on, let's say, company's site, right? You have to bring them to a site and everything. So what we wanted to do is, we also wanted to increase the content, user-generated content within our website. So that's where we have actually developed that solution. And in the last 1 year, we've got good results. We call it Megastore Social. So you go to megastores.com/social. What you see is every brand, it's like a timeline, like a Facebook timeline within our platform, that every seller can post their content on it. And there is an automated version as well that you can even post it onto your other social media. And then people can like, comment, and, you know, ask right there on the platform. And that's how, like, we kind of get more queries. And the second thing is video commerce. So right now we have partnered with a third party, one of our partner, wherein we bring video commerce inside Megastore. So our mobile application and web application, they have this feature that every artisan with just their mobile phone and put a stand on it, you can start a streaming, live video streaming, and you can actually show your product. Hey, you know, this is my product. You can create a smaller version of streams. We don't have a larger version right now, but maybe 5 to 7 minutes of streams. And everybody, all customers, they'll get notification and they'll jump onto the stream and say, hey, okay, what is this? Okay, this guy is from, let's say he's a leather product artisan and he's selling these brand new leathers. Even if they, let's say the artisans, they are exhibiting somewhere, they'll start live streaming basically, and people will watch on our website and mobile app and say, you know, okay, you know, this is, for example, let's say Achal Bijlani is one of the seller of leather products on our platform. So they'll be able to say, you know, I want one, and, you know, they can comment, and that's the custom order also we create, and, you know, they'll be able to place, pay money and sell it. So that channel, or that this feature, is also live. So Megastore Social is something that we are really working hard, and ultimately what we want to become is that when you enter Megastore, there'll be a lot of lives going on within the platform, and you'd want to choose which live I would want to go to. You know, we'll also give the star ratings and kind of responsiveness of that seller, so that people would want to choose and, you know, enter and, you know, see the product live and, you know, purchase it, basically. So something like video commerce is, we are really working towards that, make the experience seamless. Plus, I think I'm more excited about that video commerce piece, basically. And it's already, like, you know, live on our platform for people to use. And finally, we're talking about the seller. So we have around 450 registered businesses on the platform, but in turn we are connected with 4,500 plus artisans, basically, in like almost 16 to 17 states of India. And that's where we also provide different workflows for our customers, so they can even shop by region. So they can go to a particular state, you know, with a, you know, Google Maps, say I want to buy something from Kashmir, click, and then you'll see sellers. You go to any seller and then purchase. We are also working to add shop by material. So basically, if I want to. So, I mean, these are various, I'd say, experiments, basically, that we are constantly trying and finding out which one would work best for us. And then once we identify it, then we'll, you know, invest more in it. That's how we're doing.
Wow, well, it sounds very impressive. It's so nice what you're doing for all these artisans, you know, across India, because I'm sure a majority of them, you know, kind of have a big income from what you guys sell on your platform. So very, very impressive. I also love the whole video commerce piece. It's pretty much like a luxury segment where you can buy straight from the catwalk, you know. So great to see that you guys are applying this, you know, sort of in India, these artisans who could never afford themselves to even like invest in the technology required to stream something live like this. So very nice. So my final question is, so what's the exit strategy? What's the next step? Are you guys looking to raise, to merge, to sell? You know, because you are kind of technically in this e-com tech type of business, which is like a platform. And as Alex mentioned, you know, if Chinese players are not after you yet, they will be after at some point, because India is very, very big market. So, you know, it's just probably we haven't hit the priority list yet. So what's next for Megastores?
So next thing for us is to scale, basically scale faster in other countries, because you'll see what happens within India. Of course, India is a huge market, but if you try more in US and UAE, these are the two countries that would want to get larger customer base. So, you know, UAE is something that, you know, it's very close to India. I mean, we can handle the business easily. So something we are targeting where we have a JV with some company in UAE, some collaboration on revenue sharing basis, probably I would want to get some sort of a localized or personalization implemented for, let's say UAE market. You know, targeting their festivals, trying to make sure the kind of, so some sort of a market research also would want to do it as soon as possible to identify which product categories, you know, will go faster in UAE market, for example. And yeah, through local partnership, basically, only then we'll be able to solve. And, you know, we'd want to straight away jump into, you know, getting more customers from UAE. US is also something that we are working. We already have identified a few partners, basically in California, who would want to, let's say, directly purchase some categories, some product, you know, and create a local warehouse there, and then they'll ship it locally. That's something, because US is huge, 33% overall of import. So yeah, so that's the thing. Like, you know, scale is something in our mind through local partnership. We already have a list of products that we know that these products' quality, how they are created. And I missed one point earlier, is seller prioritization. I talked about that, but I didn't tell you what it is. So that out of these 450 sellers, basically, we have identified 50 sellers, only 50 sellers who are like of a decent size. They can cater to like a very good number of product categories. And we are focused on these 50 sellers. Like, you can call it like, you know, they are a primary or a, I would say premium sort of a category or collaboration with us. And we are building the relationship with these 50 sellers and make sure that we get some extra services like quick product deliveries, or, you know, we also have make on demand feature. So a lot of products from these 50 sellers, even if they are out of stock, you know, we have a make on demand feature. So you can get the inquiries and these sellers will be able to produce them much more faster compared to that. So we're also invested into, you know, bringing these sellers and their product to the different. And yeah, you know, keep innovating in technology. Technology is my favorite thing. I'm a tech guy, so I'd always want to, you know, make the best use of technology to solve these problems, basically. Yeah.
Super cool, Kailash. Thank you for this very inspiring story. I guess it's not the last one, like from India, because it's just a booming market. So I guess we're going to see like more megastores.com here in the podcast. Maybe not with a particular same business model, but a different one. And wishing you a lot of like success in the future. Thank you.